The following is a home program on Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 7, text number 28, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasadhikari, recorded on June 17th, 2009, in Melbourne, Australia.
So, tonight we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 7, text number 28. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Yesham tvantagatam papam.
Yesham tvantagatam papam.
Jananam punyakarmanam.
Jananam punyakarmanam.
Te dvandva mohamir mukta.
Te dvandva mohamir mukta.
Vajante mandritha vrita. Persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, and whose sinful actions are completely eradicated, are freed from the dualities of illusion, and they engage themselves in my service with determination. Report by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Those eligible for elevation to the transcendental position are mentioned in this verse. For those who are sinful, atheistic, foolish, and deceitful, it is very difficult to transcend the duality of desire and hate. Only those who have passed their lives in practicing the regulated principles of religion, who have acted piously and who have conquered sinful reactions, can accept devotional service and gradually rise to the pure knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then, gradually, they can meditate in trance on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the process of being situated on the spiritual platform. This elevation is possible in Krishna consciousness, in the association of pure devotees. For in the association of great devotees, one can be delivered from delusion. It is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.2, that if one actually wants to be liberated, he must render service to the devotees. Mahat sevang dharam mahor vimukte. But one who associates with materialistic people is on the path leading to the darkest region of existence. Tamo dvaram yoshitam sangi sangham. All the devotees of the Lord traverse this earth just to recover the conditioned souls from their delusion. The impersonalists do not know that forgetting their constitutional position as subordinate to the Supreme Lord is the greatest violation of God's law. Unless one is reinstated in his own constitutional position, it is not possible to understand the Supreme Personality or to be fully engaged in his transcendental loving service with determination. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata
Pada Kamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raguna Tanvitam Tam Sajiva Sudaitam Zavadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakonvitamscha.
So, how to be in this position as described by Krishna? That is the challenge facing us. You understand? That is the challenge we face. We engage ourselves in devotional service, but are we doing it with determination? Or are we doing it whimsically? That is the challenge. Dridha Vratta. How to be very, very serious about Krishna consciousness. If we're semi-serious, will we go back to Godhead? If you have material desires, Krishna will say, all right. You can take birth again to fulfill those desires. Not some automatic thing. You just get initiated and you're automatically going back to Godhead. According to your mentality, you see, that determines your next birth. Yam yam bapi smaram bhavam tijant jante kalevanam Tam tam vivaiti kondeya sadata bhavabhavata. In whatever state of being, you quit this body, you see. That state you will attain. So if we leave our bodies today, you see, yeah, we can all analyze every day. At the end of the day, you can think, well, if I had left my body today, was I absorbed in Krishna bhakti, or was I thinking about material sense gratification? Would I have left? Would I have gone back to Godhead if I had left my body today, you see? Some may say, well, I don't have to worry about it. Now I'm only, 25 or 35 or 45. Don't really have to think about that now. I mean, come on, let's not get depressed, have some depressing thinking going on. No. You can die at any time, isn't it? So we should live every day as if it would be our last day, you see? Why every day? Every minute. At every minute we should be focusing on determinedly observing ourselves in Krishna consciousness. Knowing full well that any second this play and the drama will come to an end and the next play will come in, you see. It's really not difficult to do that, if you want to do. Man proposes and God disposes. If you really want to be as they call it, dead serious about Krishna consciousness. You can be dead serious. Of course, dead sounds bad, doesn't it? Dead serious. They call it dead serious. But that dead means dead to sense gratification. The more you become dead to sense gratification, the more you become alive to Krishna. You see. So for us, being dead serious is very good. It means becoming alive serious, you see. In other words, the more you become dead serious about Krishna consciousness, the more you become alive in transcendental realization. And we become fully awakened in transcendental realization. There is nothing sweeter, nothing more wonderful, nothing more exciting, actually, than that. Gyanena tutat agyanam yesham nashitam atmanaha tesham madityam vajgayam prakashayati tatpadam. When one is enlightened with that knowledge by which nescience is destroyed, his knowledge reveals everything as the sun lights up everything in the daytime. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 5, text number 16. You see, that's the consciousness that is bestowed upon those who become dead serious about Krishna consciousness. They become fully awakened. You see, Yomang Pashyati Sarvacha Sarvangcha Mai Pashyati Tashyaham na pranashyani, pranashyami, satchamena pranashyati. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, text number 30. For one who sees me in sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. You see. The pure devotee sees Krishna everywhere. He's constantly experiencing Krishna. He's constantly associating with Krishna. You see. When he takes the darshan of the deities, he drinks their form into his heart through his eyes, you see. He concentrates deeply on the form of the deities. He concentrates deeply on the sound of Krishna's name. In this way, he enters into the transcendental association of Krishna at every minute. No matter what he's doing, whether he's at the temple, whether he's at work, whether he's at home, whether he's on a commute, whether he's in line at Safeway, in all conditions, he sees Krishna within everything and everything within Krishna. And he feels great compassion for all living entities, seeing that these souls, they are Krishna's beloved children. They are my beloved brothers and sisters, but at the present moment they become completely diverted by bodily consciousness. This bodily consciousness, it is the deadly enemy of the human society. If you were to bring in a machine gun and mow everybody down with a machine gun, it wouldn't be as bad as this bodily consciousness disease, which is killing everyone, you see. Not only physically, but spiritually. That's the worst murder, you see. To teach somebody that they are their body and that a whole happiness is based on sense gratification, that is the worst poison you can ever give to someone. Because it not only affects them in this lifetime, it affects them for the next lifetime, and the next lifetime, and the next lifetime. For millions and millions of births. You see, they got this human form after evolving through 8 million species. They finally got the human form. And now, if they use the human form, which is meant for self-realization, to simply become a royal edition of the animals, eating, sleeping, mating, and offending in a slightly more polished fashion, then it is the greatest tragedy. Actually, even though we may polish it, we cannot compete with the animals. They can't compete with their sense enjoyment. We are not equipped to enjoy our senses like the animal. That is not our happiness. Therefore, when people try to become happy by gratifying their senses, they do not become happy. They become frustrated. They become bewildered. They become confused. They become full of anger, frustration, enmity. Because they're not able to connect with the all-merciful Supreme Person. They can't represent His love in their dealings with others. Therefore, they kill the animals, they kill the unborn children. They simply kill, 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 thinking now we can make happiness. We just have to do some more killing, and then we can be happy. Yes, we agree, but you have to kill the demoniac mentality. Krishna consciousness means to kill the demoniac mentality. Of course, formerly it meant to kill the demons, you know. Krishna used to kill the demons. That was his pleasure pastime. Wiping out one, you know, another day, another demon. The cowherd boys were all amazed. They would come home at night to their mother. They said, Mataji, Mataji, we were in Vrindavan forest today and this big demon came, Mataji, and Krishna killed him. That was his pleasure pastime, you see. I especially like that when he went to Mathura. That's the one I like the most. That washerman, you know, the king's washerman, Kamsa's washerman. I love that best. Just imagine Krishna coming in, all these country boys, you know, who just used to be the forest life. They thought they'd go in and check out the city, you know. They come into Mathura. It's a whole, it's completely amazing. They've never been in the city, you know. They're checking out the city. It's like some boy coming from the farm going to New York City, you know, walking down Fifth Avenue. What's, you know. So they come into Mathura, all the cowherd boys, you know. And Krishna sees the washerman with all, Kamsa's washerman with all these fancy clothes for the king, you know. And he's thinking, boy, this has been, these look like really nice clothes. I like, you know, me and my cowherd boys, we can wear all these clothes. He said, why don't you give them to us? He just said, you give us these clothes, he said. Just see how Krishna didn't care for the law and order of Kamsa. He couldn't care for any of the law and order. He's the Supreme Lord, and his cowherd boys are in his protection. The same Krishna that went walking into the mouth of Agasura, you see. Now he's walking into the mouth of Mathura. Kamsa's abode, you see. Kamsa thought it was his abode. Actually, it's Krishna's abode. So the washerman said, what do you mean? What are you talking about? You impotent boy, don't you know these are the clothes of the king? How dare you ask me to give you these clothes? So what did Krishna do? Did Krishna have to learn karate anywhere? No, he gave him one karate chop. His head went up. And he grabbed the clothes and Krishna put on some, all the cowherd boys, and they kept walking down the road, checking out Mathura. They're in the king's clothes, you know. It's a wonderful pastime. It'd be a great movie. Hollywood movie, just Krishna coming to Mathura, you know. It'd be an amazing movie, how he kills Kamsa. I really liked it when you know, after wiping out those wrestlers, you know, that Kamsa's... I really liked it when Krishna was... You know, he wiped out the wrestlers that were supposed to kill him and Balaram. They easily defeated him. They were now dead. And now he looks over there, he looks up in the arena and there's Kamsa sitting there. You know? And Krishna runs over there and grabs him, pulls him in, sits on his chest and goes, pow, 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 pow. In front of everybody, and just annihilates him just by punching his chest, you know. Kills him. What a wonderful scene that must have been. Just imagine Kamsa biting the dust, as it were, being wiped out by Krishna. So that's this killing of the demons, that is the pastime of Krishna. But in this age, you know the pastime. And that Jagai Madai, they were such rascals. These fellows were the mafia, the head of the Mayapur mafia. You see, they're very demoniac fellows. They just soon kill you as look at you. They didn't care. If every woman was fair game for rape, any woman they liked, just rape her, you know. They were really low class, really, really low class. So when Haridas Thakur and Nodintananda went out preaching, they thought, well, if we can convince these fellows to chant Hare Krishna, that'll be a great victory for the Sankirtan movement. And they just ran after them. What are you talking about? Get the hell out of here, we'll kill you, you know. So the Lord Nityananda and Haridas, they ran for it. But they were so bold, they went back again another day, you see. And this time, the worst of the two, Madai, he was worse than Jagai. Madai was really, really, really wicked. He took that earthen liquor pot and he smashed Lord Nityananda on the head. Lord Nityananda, blood was streaming down his face. You can just imagine a horrible thing, that offense that was against the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just imagine what a horrible thing. Lord Chaitanya heard about it, that these rascals have injured Lord Nityananda. He came there in great anger. His Sudarshan Chakra he invoked. He was ready to just kill him on the spot. Kill him right now. Just kill him. He was so angry. Just like a lion, he wanted to kill him. And he wanted to just kill him instantly. There was no question of anything. Just kill him right now. Kill him. So angry. Well, Lord Nityananda said, my dear Lord, in this age, everyone is like this, more or less. It's a whole age of Jagais and Madais. If you kill these fellows, you have to end up killing everybody. What about your Sankirtan movement? So Lord Chaitanya says, all right, if they give up their sinful life and chant the holy names, I will accept them. So, in this age, we are still into killing, you see. But not killing the body, killing the demoniac mentality by the Namas and Kirtan movement, you see. That is we are spiritual terrorists in that sense, you see. Killing the demoniac mentality. We want to bestow the greatest mercy upon everyone by giving them the opportunity to connect with Krishna through his holy name, through prasadam, through the association of devotees, through wonderful festivals like Ratha Yatra, through beautiful deity worship and wonderful home programs and Prabhupada's books, massive distribution of Prabhupada's books to every home, to every person on the whole planet, in every language. In this way, we want that everyone should become completely inundated with the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. So the demoniac mentality will evaporate, actually. The demoniac mentality is not the actual mentality of anyone. Even though we study in the Bhagavad Gita about the divine and demoniac natures, the actual nature of every single living entity is he's the pure devotee of Krishna. Jivara Sarupa Hoy Krishnara Nityadas. One time we were flying, Mataji and I were flying from Fiji to Los Angeles. We were checking in the Nandi airport for the flight. And one atheistic man, very haughty atheist, he saw, oh, here's some religious people, I'm going to smash them. Philosophically. He said, what do you believe in? I immediately picked up on his mood. And so I simply told him this. I said, know who you are and be who you are. He couldn't say a word. He was defeated, you see, in his attempt to smash me. That's actually all we're really saying. This is not a, in case you just understand, this is not a cult. This is not a religious cult. This is a science. We are an educational institution. We are teaching the science of how to know who you are and how to be who you are. You see. We want you to know who you actually are. Beyond, the society has not told you who you actually are. Therefore, you're bewildered in life. You're not satisfied. You're not, you don't feel fulfilled because you don't know who you are. You've been cheated. You've been misled into thinking that you're a lump of flesh. That you are a lump of flesh and blood, a rotting lump of flesh and blood. No wonder people aren't happy. They've been taught that I'm a rotting lump of flesh and blood. And you just got to try to squeeze as much pleasure as you can out of it while you can. I mean, it's a ludicrous philosophy. But that's the whole world is going on that philosophy right now, isn't it, Finn? The whole world is going on this philosophy. That you are a rotting lump of flesh and blood, so squeeze it as hard as you can and get as much nectar out of it as you can while you can. I mean, it's stupid. But that's what they're going on, you see. That's the whole world society going on that principle. So, by the mercy of Prabhupada and these great, great Vaishnava Acharyas, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, our great songwriters, Narottam Das Thakur, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the six Goswamis, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and back from there, you know, Ishvarapuri, Madhavendrapuri, all these great acharyas, Madhvacharya, Srila Vyasadeva, Narada Muni, Lord Brahma, all these great acharyas, you see, they have so kindly bestowed upon us the wonderful medicine to relieve us from all the distresses of material existence and to bring us back to our eternal, unlimitedly blissful, all-cognizant position as the eternal servant of that amazingly beautiful, all-powerful, all-renounced, all-knowledgeable, all-wealthy, an all-famous personality known as Krishna. We are the most fortunate people in the whole universe. Do you know that? We are the most fortunate people in the whole universe because we have gotten the seed of bhakti coming down from these great acharyas. You see, no one has gotten this. Only a very small number have gotten this seed. So do not waste this seed that you have been blessed with. Utilize this seed. Cultivate this seed of bhakti in your heart by regular chanting and by strictly following the regulated principles. No illicit sex, no meat eating, no intoxication, and no gambling. If you do so, we absolutely guarantee you that you will come to the point where you'll be able to see Krishna face to face, eye to eye. We guarantee it. That's the result. You become a direct personal associate of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the source of all existence, someone who owns and controls everything. You'll be his personal associate. So I can ask now if there's any questions.
I have a question.
Oh, here we go. Oh, a whole bowl full of questions.
I have a question.
Huh?
I have a question.
Question. Okay, how to get completely absorbed in reading Srila Prabhupada's books? Well, I recommend reading them at a time when there's no distractions. What I used to do when I was a brahmachari, this is an example. You know, we have our japa period in the temple from Mangal Arati up until the greeting of the deities. But the cook, he had to cook during the japa period. So what he would do is he would get up at 2 o'clock in the morning, take his shower, and chant 16 rounds between 2:30 and 4:30, and then go cook during the japa period. And I got up with him, but I would go study during the japa period. There was no distractions at that time. So the best thing is find another time, another point in my life, my devotional career, when I was preaching on the campus in Florida. We had just gotten it was a brand new thing, and I tell you, it was an exciting era in ISKCON history. They just started up this Bhaktivedanta tape ministry in Los Angeles, and you could subscribe and get a standing order for all the new tapes that are being released every week. The servant would be recording, and they would send it to L.A., and there was, you know, every day, there would be like, every week there was like, you know, maybe 10 or 12 tapes a week, I don't know how many, but... So we had tapes coming in the mail every week, and all these tapes. And where's the time to sit and study them and listen to them and take notes? I wanted to sit and be able to focus on them completely. Not that I'm washing the dishes, I hear a tape. No, I wanted to sit down, hear the tape, and be able to stop the tape and write down notes and really go deep into studying the tapes. But there was no time in the schedule. What to do? Well, I got a bright idea. I said, well... There's one time when the Brahmacharya Ashram is completely peaceful, and that's during lunch. So I just skip lunch every day. Did I starve? No. I had a big breakfast. And I was fine. I would just skip lunch every day and study during that time. And then I would go out and preach on the campus that afternoon with what I was reading in Prabhupada's books. And it was powerful. We made so many devotees during that time. So just find some way to, if you need to, give up some sleeping and eating if you have to. Work it into your schedule where you have a time where it's just you and Prabhupada and nothing else. There's no distractions. It's your time to have a personal meeting with Srila Prabhupada. Even if you have to give up eating and sleeping to do that. You'll be glad you did. Okay, the next one. How can one increase his enthusiasm more and more to read the scriptures? That's almost the same question. It's similar. Well, by doing it, you will develop a taste. Just by doing it, the scriptures themselves will enliven you so much your enthusiasm will naturally increase. I am hardly feeling any enthusiasm at reading books. Kindly advise me on how it can be improved and done consistently every day. Well, I've already done that. I believe the first two answers. All right, next one. Just one, yeah. Okay, sickness and disease can really disturb one's sadhana, and one may lose taste for devotional activities. Please advise how to stay determined after such setbacks. Welcome to old age. I one time sarcastically wrote a little tune, old age, how I love you, how I love you. My dear old age. Yeah, it's a challenge, there's no doubt. But I'll give you an example. Is anybody go out sailing? Any of you are sailors who take the boats out and sail for a sport? Anybody have any sailors here? No? No sailors? Okay. I was told, and I was a little skeptical about it, but I was wondering, you know, you don't have a motor, you're just relying on the wind. What if you want to get from here to there and the wind is coming from there? How do you sail into the wind? How would you ever get there? You see. So I looked it up in Wikipedia, yeah. And actually, there is a way that you can actually sail into the wind. It's amazing. By the laws of physics, you can actually take the power of the wind coming this way and sail directly into the wind and go It's amazing, but you can do it. It's described in the, if you look up in Wikipedia, just go to Wikipedia, go to Google and type in sailing into the wind and see, you can read about it yourself. It can be done, and it is done by sadhus. So even if something appears to be an impediment in your devotional service, you can use that very thing to advance in Krishna consciousness. And that's the point. Why does Kunti Devi pray for difficulties and calamities? You see, why is she begging Krishna? Vipada shantuta shashvat tatra tatra jagad guru bhavanam darshanam yatsyad apunarbhava darshanam. Why is she begging for more and more difficulties? My dear Krishna, please give me more and more devastating calamities. Please bless me with more and more calamities. Because the more I face devastating, calamitous, nightmarish conditions, the more I take shelter of you. And the more I take shelter of you, I know I will not see birth and death. So, the intelligent devotee, you see, when he hears Prabhupada say that even the most negative reverse situations are the favor of Krishna, then he says, well, I don't understand how, but I put my faith in Prabhupada. You see? It's like I've been facing for the last, since I was 16 years old, I've been facing a tremendous hell with my ears, you see. Heavy ringing, constant ringing, and earaches, and just one nightmare after another, wherever I go, all over the world, it's hell. In fact, it's supposed to be one of the three most disturbed, according to the American Tinnitus Association, is supposed to be one of the three most distressing things known to man. And I've been suffering it ever since I was 16. So, how to deal with that, you see?
What are the other two, Maharaj? What are the other two things? Most distressing to man?
What's he saying?
More disturbing, what are the other two things?
Oh, I don't remember the other two things. That's many years ago I read that thing. So I've learned how to see, well, Krishna, you know, what can... Actually, devotee thinks that I'm deserving this for my past misdeeds. There's a nice mantra, Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 14, text 58. Tate nukampam susamikshamano Bhunjana evatma kritam vapakam tadvag vapurve vidadang namaste jivetayo mukti pade satayabak. My dear Lord, those persons who are constantly awaiting your causeless mercy to be bestowed upon them, who continue suffering the reactions to their past misdeeds while constantly offering you respectful obeisances from within the innermost cores of their hearts, are certainly eligible candidates for liberation. Indeed, it has become their rightful claim. So when a devotee faces a calamity, he's saying, Krishna, why are you doing this to me? Don't you understand I'm your devotee? What's wrong with you, Krishna? That's a Kanishta Adhikari mentality, you see. That's not the right way to think. You think, Krishna, somehow you're blessing me with this. I don't understand how. It's hell, but Krishna, it's okay. I know you're giving it to me for a purpose. There's a meaning behind it. So I accept it. And I beg you to please help me be totally grateful for what you're doing to me right now. In this way, you'll train yourself by praying according to that verse, 10.14.58, Bhagavatam. And by remembering Kunti Devi's prayer. It will be like sailing into the wind. You can use those negative things as a stepping stone, just like when Dhruva was getting ready to, just like Dhruva Maharaj was is approached by death. Now, if death personified came rushing at you, would you become bewildered? Oh my God, here comes death. You see. Would you freak out? Oh, death is coming. Death is coming. Dhruva was not bewildered. You know what he did? Some of you may remember. He stepped on the head of death and entered into the Vaikuntha airplane. So when a calamity comes, sickness, disease, all these kinds of distresses, use them as stepping stones to enter into the transcendental existence. Thank you very much, Maya Devi, or Krishna. It's Krishna through his material energy. Forgive me this sickness, this distress. Now I will take advantage of it to enter into the to a higher level of Krishna consciousness than I've ever been on before. You see, in this way. That's how you deal with the negative things. Of course, you should do everything you can to, you know, go to a doctor. We don't say to neglect disease. You should try to get rid of it. But even in spite of your best endeavor, I've been trying for 40 years to solve this problem with no luck. You just got to tolerate it sometimes. Okay. And take it to as an advantage in your Christian, your spiritual life. This has helped me to get ready for death. One gobbler told me, I mentioned this problem to him, he said, well, this is simply to increase your hankering to get a spiritual body. He saw that was very nice advice he gave me. Vaisheshika Prabhu told me like that. Okay. How to, it's a misspelling. How to balance your spiritual life and material life. What is that verse? Vidyam shavidyam yastad vido bayam saha avidyayam ritam tirtva vidyayam ritam ashnute. Sri Yashopanasad, mantra number 11. Only that person who can balance material life and spiritual life, you see. Who can simultaneously, properly balance material life and spiritual life. Only that person can enjoy the full blessings of immortality. So it's a very important thing to know how to balance them. Actually, we're already enough into material life. You don't have to think about increasing that one. we already got that one down pretty solid. And now you got to bring the other one in. That's what we have to do to balance it. You got to bring spiritual life in to balance it. And you have to put spiritual life first, you see. I just got an email from one of my readers on the e-course. He said, Guruji, my philosophy is that think of yourself first and then God next. What do you think about them? I said, you got it backwards. Think of yourself, of God first, and then think of yourself. So we have to prioritize our Krishna consciousness. That's why, you know, I don't approve this idea of getting up late, you know, taking your shower, taking breakfast, rushing to the office, chant a few rounds here, a few rounds there. You're not prioritizing Krishna consciousness when you do that. You have to get up early. The ideal thing is get up early, chant 16 rounds before you leave the house. Give Krishna the first time of your day, the first quality. Give Krishna a solid quality time of your day before you even think about it, material life, you see. You should go to Vrindavan. That's another nice question. You should go to Vrindavan every morning by taking shelter of the holy name. And that will, if you have chant very good japa, then you'll get a very good balance in your life. Okay, benchmark? Oh, okay. For a devotee, grihastha to support temple activities. 50%, Prabhupada said. Give 50% of your income to the temple. That's the benchmark. So if you can't do that, give 49%. Can't do that, give 48%. The Christians give 10%. If you can even do that much, then we'll at least be keeping up with the Christians. They, Christians in America, I know about all Australia, but in America they're very strict. And as a little kid I was taught my allowance, I'd give 10% of my allowance every Sunday in the envelope. Of course it wasn't much. I got a 5 cents allowance, so it was half a cent of every week. But anyway, but I was trained to give 10% of my allowance to the church every Sunday. So yeah, that's a very strict principle. If we're not even giving 10%, we have to wonder, you know, am I really devoted to Krishna or I'm just going to the temple to get prasadam? We have to really wonder, you know. We should be, the Christians are spreading all over the world their Christianity because they support it with money. You should see the churches they're building in the U.S. I don't know about here, but it's incredibly, it's amazing what they're doing. And the other Hindu organizations are doing it now, too. I've seen the Swami Narayan people, they built a $5 million temple in Atlanta, like a whole South Indian temple in Atlanta. Very opulent, marble, millions and millions of dollars they put in. So we really have to think about how committed we are to Prabhupada's mission. And we, you know, we have to not just theoretically, but practically with our checkbooks, and really have to think about it and see what we can do to do a better job in that department. Okay. How to live together with your family, especially if your family members are not devotees. It's simple, make them into devotees. I mean, what are you waiting for? Do you really love them or not? Now, sometimes they don't want to be devotees, but you have to be more determined that they be. You have to be more determined that they should become devotees than they are determined that they should not be devotees. And in the long run, I mean, I'm counseling. I have an aspiring disciple in Canada. His wife is just like really against it, but he's just, I mean, for years he's just been gently nudging her, and she's coming along now, little by little by little. She gets upset, you know, they'll go to a retreat, and he'll give more attention to the programs than he does to her, and she'll get real upset about it. She goes along, but she's gradually coming around, you know. It's a very slow process, and he's making her Krishna conscious. So in this way, you have to just not give up, keep feeding him, prasadam. Somebody just wrote me, they said that, you know, he's new, he's just getting married, the girl doesn't want to be a Krishna conscious. She's agreed to read 2 or 3 pages of Prabhupada's books every day. So I said, you should sit with her for those 2 or 3 pages, and you discuss it together in a very compassionate way. You study and discuss this knowledge together every day for those 2 or 3 pages. And this way you have to give them a lot of love, you see. No one in the material world is giving him love. So a devotee, he can give love better than anyone. You give those persons your love better than anyone else, and you'll be able to make them devotees in due course of time. Hare Krishna Maharaj. Even though we hear so much about attentive chanting, somehow I'm not able to be determined about getting up early and chanting my japa. Well, if one alarm clock doesn't work, set 2 of them. And put the second one on the other side of the room. You know, if that doesn't work, put a third one on the other end of the room. And somehow or other, get up, you know. And once you're up, don't get back in the bed. Grab those beads and just chant. And, you know, some people, their family members, they can't take a shower early because all the family's sleeping. You can chant without bathing if you have to. But if you can take that bath early, that's best, because then that'll really wake you up. Get that bath. Okay. The mind keeps giving excuses about how I should sleep more. Well, just tell your mind. Tell your mind. Okay, mind. You can have a nap later on after you finish your run. No, it's not, if you're a little sleepy, you need more rest, you can take a nap after you finish your job. I tell some people, you know, get up, get all your rounds done, do everything, and then you can take a nap before you go to work. There's no reason you can't take a nap after you finish your run. Okay, next question. Hare Krishna. Can you please tell me what is the difference between avidya and maya? They're very similar. Avidya is ignorance, and maya is the energy that puts you into ignorance. So they're very similar. How they both influence society and how one can get rid of them. Thank you, Hare Krishna. Well, you have to read the transcendental literature and chant Hare Krishna and engage in devotional service, and then all the avidya will go away from your heart. All the maya will go away from your heart. And then you can be a positive, you can have a positive uplifting impact on the global society to help it get out of maya and avidya. Okay, next one. Okay. Hare Krishna Maharaj. Even though I am regularly chanting 16 rounds, still I have not got a taste for chanting. I feel I'm doing it mechanically. How do I improve? Okay. The first thing is don't try to get a taste. You may be shocked to hear that, but I'll tell you what I mean. Instead of you trying to get a taste out of the name, you try to give Krishna taste by your chanting. Just like in a mundane example, you know, in the material world, some boy is singing a love song to his girlfriend. Is he trying to sing for his own enjoyment or for her enjoyment? He's trying to sing in such a way that he really enjoys the singing. Is he trying to sing in such a way that she really enjoys his singing? You see? Mundane example, I know, but it makes a good point. So you should chant in such a way that Krishna goes, oh, this devotee is chanting, calling my name with such utter helplessness, like a child crying for the mother, or he's chanting with so much love. This is so wonderful how he's chanting. That's how you should chant. Don't you think, oh, I want to get taste out of this. Why am I not getting any taste? No, you try to give taste to Krishna, and then you will get unlimited oceans of taste from that chanting. Okay, next one. What is the meaning of the Vandeham prayers that you recite in the beginning? Well, I chant it because I'm invoking the mercy of all the previous acharyas, you see. Because I realize that I'm just a croaking toad. But even a croaking toad can deliver eloquent speeches if he has the mercy of the previous acharyas. So it means I offer my respectful obeisances under the lotus feet of my spiritual master and to the feet of all Vaishnavas. I offer my respectful obeisances under the lotus feet of Srila Rupa Goswami, along with his elder brother, Sanatan Goswami, as well as Raghunath Das and Raghunath Bhatta, Gopal Bhatta and Jiva Goswami. I offer my respectful obeisances to Lord Krishna Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, along with the Dvaitacharya, Gadadhar Srivas and other associates. I offer my respectful obeisances to Srimati Radharani and Sri Krishna, along with their associates Sri Lalita and Vishaka. It also mentions Sri Gurun, plural form. This is not given in the translation, but that's an important point also. Not just to my guru only, but to all the gurus, you see. So I'm giving all the previous acharyas in the disciplic succession. I'm invoking them, I'm begging for their mercy, Prabhupada's mercy, Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati's, everyone's mercy. Excuse me. So in this way, I know that if I can get their mercy, then I can speak something that's worthwhile. It benefits me and it benefits all the hearers. If I can speak, just be a delivery boy for their message, then I know that he will have shakti, bhakti shakti, and we will all become enlightened by the talk. Oh, thank you. Yes, that's good. So, what should we do if we commit some offense to a devotee, and how to judge whether we are doing the things right, especially when false ego becomes strong? What should we do? Well, what we have to do is worship the devotees. That's the first thing. Then you will never make any offense. If you're just thinking, well, I have to avoid offenses, that's a negative instruction. You'd have nothing to do then. You have to actually do something positive which is offenseless, and that is to worship the devotees. Anande bolo hari bhaja vrindavan, si guru vaishnava pade maja iya man. should always worship the lotus feet of Guru and Vaishnava. So, if you, why worry about what to do when you commit offense? Why not just start from the beginning and don't even commit the offense? That's the first thing. And you do that by worshiping the devotees. Every devotee should be worshipable. Within your heart, you should find some, you should admire and appreciate every single devotee in the whole movement. Every devotee you know, you should find something about that devotee that you can worship them and admire them for that quality. So in this way, if in your heart you're always admiring the devotees, even if there's some disagreement, it will never cause you to be offensive towards them. If there is an offense, you should bow down at their feet and beg forgiveness. How to judge whether we're doing things right? When in doubt, assume that you're doing it wrong. That's the safest position. When you're doubtful, assume you're doing it wrong. It's better than doing something wrong and assuming you're doing it right. But if you read Prabhupada's books and you take advantage of the Senior Devotees Association, then you can discern whether it was right or wrong. And my point is, don't assume you're doing things right without really knowing that you're doing them right. That's the point. When in doubt, find out. Inquire. Am I doing this right? Ask a senior devotee. Ask your spiritual master. Consult Prabhupada's books. Be very sincere in your devotional service, and Krishna from within the heart will tell you also whether you're doing it right or not. So that way you can overcome the false ego. Oh, we're down to the end here. The last one. The last two. Hare Krishna Prabhu, today you mentioned about seriousness in Krishna consciousness. I have two questions. What is complete seriousness in Krishna consciousness? Ahai to ki pratiyata yayatma supersedati. When one's devotional service is completely free of any mundane motivations and it's 24/7, completely uninterrupted, and then you're really serious and you will taste unlimited happiness. Number two, how can we understand and realize our level of seriousness in Krishna consciousness? Well, you can simply analyze, you can psychoanalyze yourself. Is my every thought, word, and deed in all times, places, and circumstances 100% for the pleasure of Krishna? If your answer is yes, then you're very serious about Krishna consciousness. If the answer is maybe, then you're not fully there yet. If the answer is no, then you're definitely not there yet. So you have to ascertain that everything, every thought, word, and deed is simply for Krishna. I'm no longer thinking of my own self-interest, separate from Krishna's, pleasing Krishna. Now my only thought of self-interest is to please Krishna, because that is my highest self-interest. So that's covered all the questions. Is there any more?
I had a question.
All right.
Generally hear that Krishna makes condition, first surrender and then he will give. Mm-hmm. But in case of Jagai and Madhai also, Lord Chaitanya said, unless they take up this, I'll give them.
Yeah, he was showing a little bit of his Krishna nature there, wasn't he? Yeah. Lord Chaitanya is also Krishna. That's a fact. He made a condition because they were really, really wicked fellows. In many cases, Lord Chaitanya didn't make any conditions. He just zapped people with Krishna praying.
Sure.
In this case, they had to surrender, otherwise he was going to kill them. That's a fact. He was showing his nature as Krishna. In fact, if you remember in that pastime, the Lord Chaitanya doesn't normally carry a discus either. Okay, so that was Lord Chaitanya in his mood of Krishna. Demon killer. Yes. You've noted that is a different mood of Lord Chaitanya. It was Lord Nityananda's mercy that saved them. Not Lord Chaitanya's mercy. He was showing his Krishna nature of killing demons at that time. It was Lord Nityananda's mercy that saved them at that time.
So what is the hope for the people who are little Jagai Madhai? Not little, they are also big Jagai Madhai.
The hope then is that devotees like you will be merciful upon them.
I
That is their hope. That is their hope. As Lord Nityananda was, Lord Chaitanya was in the mood of Krishna wanting to kill, but Lord Nityananda evoked Chaitanya's merciful side, you see. So, in this way, you have to be a representative of Lord Nityananda to invoke that the Chaitanya nature from Krishna with all of these people. You understand?
I understand, but still there is Lord Nityananda's mercy was there, but Lord Chaitanya gave him that unless they do this. So, those people who are not taking, chanting, so how they would be saved? Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya said, if they chant the Hare Krishna mantra, then they will be spared. Mm-hmm. So,
well, what did Prabhupada say to my godbrother in London? And he said, it was by good fortune. So the devotee wondered, well, how does that good fortune work? Is it by rolling some dice, or you know? Prabhupada said, we are their good fortune. So that's the hope. You have to be merciful upon the people. That's the hope.
Like devotees are merciful. And they are
we have to be more merciful.
They are trying to give, but there are people who don't take up chanting.
We have to be even more merciful. We have to increase. See, the trouble is we're still thinking about our own eating and sleeping, mating and defending to a great extent. I'll be honest with you. We talk about, you know, sharing the mercy, but a lot of times we're more interested in our own comforts. That's the reality. You may say that, oh, you're being harsh, but I'm saying that's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur taught by his example when he wrote the song. You know that song, Kabe Habe Bolo Sedi Namar? What is the last verse? Bhaktivinoda is wondering, when will that day be mine? Will I forget about my own sense gratification? And think about actually giving people Krishna consciousness. He's praying the Lord, please bless me that day will come when I forget my own comforts and simply think about bestowing this mercy upon the suffering souls of this age, you see. So we have the same problem, I'll be honest with you. We're thinking about our own comforts, you know, my prasadam, my living quarters, my income, you know, this and that, my car, you know. We're still too caught up in that. That's the thing. There are more questions coming in? No, okay. Yeah.
Maharaj, if you see some of the acharyas, like Srila Haridas Thakur,
yeah?
Do not know whether they had a Diksha Guru in that sense. Though you know, he surrendered to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself. But how do we, if questions come like that, how do we address these kind of
ways? So, you're saying that Haridas Thakur did not have a Diksha Guru?
I don't know whether he had.
Just because we don't know that he had Diksha from someone doesn't mean he didn't have him. Why should we assume like that? If someone says, well, you know, I don't know who such and such Acharya, I don't know his Diksha Guru is, so he must not have had one. That's speculation. That's the first thing I would say. Why are you speculating that he didn't have a Diksha Guru? And if he didn't, you can't imitate him. He's Lord Brahma himself, coming down to participate in Chaitanya Lila. He's a direct disciple of Krishna in our Sampradaya. You cannot imitate Lord Brahma.
When we presented this argument to them that we cannot imitate Lord Brahma, the next question was, but Lord himself, when he came down, he took a spiritual master.
Yes. So I don't know, I haven't studied to say who Haridas Thakur was seeing as his guru, but he certainly was accepting Lord Chaitanya as his guru. No doubt. So what is the difficulty?
This is specifically in the context of, you know, everyone having a Diksha Guru and Siksha itself not, because Ritvik is so rampant, so we want to encourage people to understand the importance of Diksha.
Oh, so many people are saying, some people say, well, I don't want to have a Diksha Guru. It's too heavy of a commitment, I'm going to take it a little easier, you know. that we see sometimes in ISKCON, sometimes I don't want to get initiated. I just want to, you know, Prabhupada's my siksha guru, I don't want to get initiated. But what did Prabhupada's? If Prabhupada's really your siksha guru, then that means you have to follow his instructions. And he told us the last year in Vrindavan, when they asked him about the new devotees coming to ISKCON, he said, they'll become the disciples of my disciple. So if you want to take Prabhupada as a siksha guru, then you have to follow his instructions if you take diksha from one of his disciples. Otherwise, you're not a siksha disciple of Prabhupada. You're just a bluffer, a pretender. You see? If you're actually wanting to follow Prabhupada's siksha, then you must take diksha from one of his disciples. Otherwise, you're not following Prabhupada. Simple thing. Does that address the argument?
Yeah, partly.
Partly? What part is unaddressed?
Only we, you know, again, then my next question would be that how do we, you know, where should I check to find out who was Haridas Thakur? Because this person was gung-ho about Haridas Thakur, and the person asked specifically this question, that Srila Haridas Thakur was Namacharya, but there is nothing mentioned in the scriptures about his, from whatever, as, you know.
Have you read, that person has read all the scriptures?
No, from whatever we know.
He says there's nothing mentioned in the scriptures. That means he's read every single scripture about Chaitanya. There's so many Chaitanya scriptures. He actually stated there's nothing mentioned in the scriptures about Haridas Thakur having a spiritual
mission. He asked me and I said I don't know because I haven't read all the scriptures.
Oh, you said, yeah. Well, we know from whatever his position is, that he is Namacharya, there's no question. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai. So, that doesn't matter in his case, whether he has a guru or he doesn't have a guru. Krishna is certain, Lord Chaitanya is certainly his guru. And Lord Chaitanya can be accepted as, by those who were present at that time with him. You could take it and become the disciple of Lord Chaitanya. He's one of the acharyas in our line of succession. One could be his disciple. There's nothing wrong with that. One could take diksha from Lord Chaitanya. There's nothing scripturally wrong. He's one of the acharyas in the list. How they gave diksha doesn't necessarily mean it's the same formula that we have in ISKCON. A different way also.
If he's finding that Namacharya Haridas Thakur was initiated, no. Ask him, do you know if he is initiated?
Because he was born in a Muslim family. Right?
Yeah, no.
So
you can ask him.
What the name Haridas
Thakur? He is trying to find, telling us that whether Haridas Thakur was initiated or not. You ask him, find it. I don't have time to read, so you find it. And prove it to me that he was not initiated. Tell him to do the service. Find out. Why asking me? Because I'm not ready. But all I know that Haridas Thakur was in, by hearing from the acharyas, that Haridas Thakur is Namacharya. So if you think that he was not initiated, then you can bring that proof to me. I would be very interested to know that.
They're looking for loopholes, you see, on the not surrender. That's all. But the fact is that yeme Krishna confirms in the Adi Purana, yeme bhakta jana parata, yeme bhaktas jana parata, na me bhaktas chateye janaha. Bhaktanam chaye bhaktas, te me bhakta tamamata. The one who is my devotee, he's not my devotee. Name me bhaktas. But the one who is the devotee of my devotee, he is my devotee. So the real meaning of diksha is not just a ceremony. That's not the meaning of diksha. The real meaning of diksha is you become the devotee of the devotee. That's the real meaning of diksha. You can't say, well, I'm an initiated devotee because I sat for the ceremony and now I'm going back to Godhead. No. Prabhupada told us, he said, the time of diksha, you attain deathlessness, provided you follow the instructions of the spiritual master. The ceremony itself has no meaning unless you follow the order of the spiritual master for your whole life. Otherwise, it's just some ritual. It has no potency. But when you actually follow the order, when you actually become the devotee of the devotee, you see, that is the real meaning of diksha. So you can't say the Haridas was not the devotee of Lord Chaitanya. You cannot say that. That would be blasphemy. He was definitely disciple of Lord Chaitanya. So the real meaning of diksha is you become completely sold out servant of the spiritual master. That's the real meaning of diksha. Actually, diksha is a siksha contract. The real essence of the guru-disciple relationship is siksha. That I will take your order as my life and soul. Your siksha is my life and soul for all of eternity. And diksha is a ceremony in which you make that commitment. But the real ongoing this relationship between master and disciple is siksha. Diksha is for 10 seconds only when he hands the beads and gives the name. But the siksha, the relationship, that's going on for all of eternity. Diksha is simply the contract. All right, now we have our siksha contract. Diksha is a siksha contract. That's all. Yeah. If someone is fully committed to serving that spiritual master, that is practical. Prabhupada said that he was practically initiated by Bhakti Siddhanta at the first meeting. Prabhupada didn't go through anything. Well, you got to be, you know, you have to do chant 16 rounds for 6 months and then you can get shelter. Prabhupada immediately said, this is my spiritual master. Sometimes in ISKCON they criticize the people, you know. There was one Mataji who wanted to be my disciple. And in her heart she knew that I'm going to become initiated by Sankarshan Dasadikari, so she was calling me Gurudev. And the temple president got all upset. Well, I haven't given her formal shelter yet. What is this? He was all upset. She was calling me Gurudev, you see. But actually, in our ISKCON law, even if you just see someone as a siksha guru, you can call them Gurudev or Guru Maharaj. You don't have to be formally sheltered to call somebody Guru Maharaj or Gurudev. Even if you just see them as a siksha guru, you can, any devotee that you see as a siksha guru can be called Gurudev or Guru Maharaj. It's right there in the GBC, the resolutions in 1997. So anyway, any other questions? Time is running. Oh. All right. So our time has run a little short. And we have to get up early for Mangalarti, you know. How many people are going to have come to Mangalarti at the temple tomorrow morning? You're not coming? How many people have Mangalarti at home tomorrow morning? Oh my God, I got a lot of preaching to do here. You all are going to be sleeping in, everybody? You're a bunch of tamagunis? Oh my God. I got a lot of preaching to do here in Melbourne. We have to bring... Not one person. With only two people in this room, they're going to be at Mangalarti tomorrow morning. Oh my God. Srila Prabhupada, please bestow your mercy on all these people. They can develop a taste for rising early and singing Gravastakam prayer. Please save them, Prabhupada. Jai, okay. Raja Vidya Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.